Heyo, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hot Share Half Hour. I'm Hannah, and I am ready to pull a Zenitsu and sleep for an undisclosed amount of time. And I'm joined by my two friends, as usual.
Hi, guys. It's Emily. I'm feeling pretty similar to Hannah here. Me lifting one paintbrush to paint my house has me feeling like I just finished the Hashira training arc. So that's where I'm at. It's great to be pushing 30. Happy Sunday.
What's up, everybody? It's Brian. I am also deliriously tired. We're really hanging in here, though. We are very much so fingers on the cliff trying to stay awake, but that's okay, right? Because we got some sleepy boys is with us as well, so we're gonna vibe through this one.
I feel like that's just such an adult thing for all of us, just be like, yeah, we're tired, what's new?
After like 25, that's just like a perpetual state, I think. Anyone who's not that old yet.
I also don't suggest going on 4 airplanes within the span of 5 days. So
Me yesterday, we're like, I'm tired. And then we're like, no, surpass your limits now.
Set your heart ablaze. Oh gosh, well, that's quite the opening. Wild tangent. Let's dive into today's episode, which is titled, What Are You? The title and the episode is continuing to set stage for what seems to be a looming battle, of course. And I have to say, this episode had some creepy vibes. The whole time, I'm just getting chills down my spine, being all creeped out. The episode does open with a flashback to the Edo period, which was quite some time in the past. I think the Edo period was pretty long, so it was quite a while ago. It seems that one of the Oirins residing in one of these houses is, in fact, a demon. We see someone try to confront her, but it's clear that the Oirin does quick work to get rid of her. She closes the doors, opens the door a few seconds later, and she is gone. We have met some pretty formidable foes during the story so far. What level of strength are you feeling based off of this flashback?
Yeah, the level of strength here is pretty obvious, right? You know, it definitely gives me a little bit of, you know, you can tell that Muzan has had some influence here too. Obviously, I mean, all demons came from Muzan, we get that part, but right, the very quick disposal of things, like being able to go through things quickly, right, gives me very much so the alley scene when we first meet Muzan. He like disposed of those two people so quickly, walked immediately away. Almost kind of like a Lloyd Forger, like literally no one saw him, no one knows he existed, but right, the job got done. It's that kind of level of thinking.
100%. Not only can we kind of tell the power level, but I think there's something to be said here for the time jump and the difference in time and the insinuation then that this is a demon that has survived all of this time and probably more than that. And being able to last so long in a world where demon slayers are out to get you and your neck, that's like a formidable strength. So I imagine just from this flashback that we are dealing, certainly with one of the 12 moons, I would imagine, at the absolute least.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the speed at which she got rid of that person and just how far back we're going in time. Definitely, I agree with both of you. It's seeming like we're going to be in for a fight to the death.
Maybe. Do we know how long it is between the Edo and Taisho eras?
We can find out.
I did not look that up, I will admit, but I should have.
I think that's like a good context question, right? Because how long would that be? I don't know.
So the Edo period was 1603 to 1867.
So it's almost 300 years, because Taisho is like 1912 is when it started.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, so I mean, it could have been the end of the Edo period, of course, which is less time. But that's still, we're talking like 50 years in between the end of the Edo and the beginning of the Taisho. And it could have been like the beginning of the Edo period that this was at. Like, they don't really disclose that. They just say it was the Edo period. So, yeah. It's a long period of time.
Goddamn.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, yeah, totally agree, both of you. Some eerie vibes are coming from this episode for sure. We then move on to our favorite three goons as they infiltrate their houses. I just love seeing them do their thing in their houses, pretending to be girls. It's so funny to me. Inosuke seems to be hot on the heels of Makio. Zenitsu is confronting someone, which we'll talk about shortly. And Tanjiro is doing chores. Is this what you expect from each member of our Kamaboko squad?
At first glance, maybe not. But do I also believe that Tanjiro would be the only one who could keep it together undercover? Absolutely. Maybe he's a little bit more in touch with his feminine side from having all his sisters. I don't know. He takes it a little bit more seriously, whereas the others, I feel like, did not even last 2 minutes before they're like being big, burly guys in their houses, but in very pretty kimonos, which is really nice for them. So I think of all of them, maybe I wouldn't have expected that from Zenitsu right away, but at the same time, he has a chance to look cool in front of some actual girls, so why wouldn't he do that? Inosuke's going to charge through the way that he always does. That's nothing new, so not super surprising, although he is still being quiet for now. So that is surprising.
Impressive.
And Tanjiro being our lovely Demon Slayer housewife for the time being. We love it.
Yeah, I liked Tanjiro being like, what can I do next? What may I do next for you? And he's like, I will refill your tea. And he was just on it. Like, honestly, wish I could be like that, right? The motivation to be able to do that. I was proud of Inosuke, though. Let me tell you, I was very proud of him because I was like, okay, at least he's using sensory and keeping his mouth shut, right? Like, he was able to do that at least for this episode to be like, okay, I am aware that there is something wrong. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong here. Zenitsu is trying his best over there, right? He's just trying to not be pissed at everything because he's in a world where he's like surrounded by his guilty pleasure, but he can't do crap about it. So yeah, it sucks to suck, kiddo.
Yeah. they're also on brand for each one. Zenitsu is just like, he's in like heaven, right? Like, he's surrounded by these girls and he's actually doing pretty good. I have to admit, I was pretty proud of him for just focusing on being angry at Tengen instead of just being like, ah, girls. Character development. Moving into kind of Inosuke here, he's definitely on to something. He kind of seems to be the only one that's kind of on track for the mission currently, while the others are just kind of all wild. He listens to a conversation about Makio, one of Uzui's wife, and he tries to check it out himself. After thinking on it briefly, he declares that that's not his style, throws open the doors, and he finds a closed room, but there's still wind in it somehow, and clattering in the ceiling. He attempts to chase the noise, but all goes wrong when he instead punches a customer. Ugh. So on brand. What did you think of Inosuke's detective skills here, and just that whole sequence of events in general?
Inspector Inosuke coming through. I mean, bro, literally, you were doing so good. Like, you had, I mean, the bar was set pretty low for like being able to blend in at first. So it's like, okay, you can give him that part of it. But also at the same time, like, he was onto something and now he punches someone in the face. Like, cover, I mean, maybe cover not blown because he hasn't said a word so far. So maybe they're just like, maybe he got like groped or something. I don't know. But right, like, here's the thing here. He was trying his best and I have to give him an A for effort at least.
Absolutely.
Shout out to Inosuke for giving the customer service we all dream of sometimes. Oops. Anyway, this is completely his style. He is just got this like animal instinct about him more so than any of the other characters, probably because he was raised by wild boars. But, you know, that aside, he's just very in tune, I think, with demons and is able to sense them really well because they're like animalistic and almost maybe give off like similar energy, if that makes sense, to like something that he would pick up on in the forest. So I think that it does make sense. And of course he, you know, goes about it in his crazy haphazard way as usual, but hopefully it'll land him some evidence or some clues about where to go looking next.
Can you imagine Inosuke in a customer service job, like on the phones?
No. Just but also yes.
He was in customer service for approximately 2 minutes and he's already punched someone in the face. I mean, that's what we all want to do for sure.
Hi, thank you for coming to my restaurant. Lord Inosuke wins. Throws drink at someone.
The customer is always wrong. Inosuke is always right. He's like the exact opposite of like the customer service way. Oh my gosh.
God.
Oh, that would be hilarious to watch. I need like a side fan fiction of just like AU, Inosuke and customer service. Anyway, I'm going on some tangents this episode. Let's talk about my boy. Tanjiro was not very present in this episode, but we do need to talk about him for a moment. With such like I keep saying, like creepy and eerie tone to the episode, it was kind of fun to see him doing what he does best, working hard, being wild with his chores. He's scrubbing the floors, changing flowers, changing out the tea, begging the master for more chores to do. Do you think Tanjiro's diligent attitude towards his task is actually sidetracking him from the mission? And if it isn't or is, why do you think so? If that makes sense. English is hard.
I don't think so. And it has to do with what I said before. Like, he plays the role very well, which is like a little bit entertaining for us to get to see. But on a more serious note, it's allowing him to build trust and proximity with the people that already work in this house in the entertainment district, which is allowing him to gain some information about things that are going on without seeming suspicious or raising any red flags, because he's trustworthy. He's already one of the team. So if anything, this is probably a little bit slower but more efficient way to get information than maybe what Zenitsu and Inosuke are doing. So
yeah, what Tanjiro is doing right now kind of reminds me of Dungeons and Dragons, so D&D. There's things called main quest and there's called side quest. Tanjiro is side questing right now. He is, you know, not exactly the main goal. Main goal here, find a demon. Sub route to find the demon, find people that know about maybe demon, right? So he's literally just trying to find anything he can for information. And while it's like not super relevant, it's at least getting him like closer to where he needs to be. Whereas before, I mean, they didn't know anything. And then Tengen was like, all right, go find my info. I love you and I hope you don't die.
Wait, did I miss the I love you?
No, that never happened. I
that definitely never happened. Yeah, I agree. I think that the first time I watched this, I was like, is he kind of getting off track? But then I realized he's a smart kid. He's like, I'm undercover. I'm going to not raise any red flags like the other two might be doing, because the other two are too wild. Speaking of the other two, let's move on to Zenitsu. He kind of got some moments in this episode I enjoyed. He has found a young girl crying and he instantly jumps in to help out, only to be confronted by what seems to be a demon. Zenitsu claims she doesn't sound like a human, and she's definitely carrying herself like a demon. She seems to be that person that we keep kind of seeing little reveals of. Zenitsu is surprisingly not freaking out. Like, he's nervous, but he's not, you know, crying or screaming. You know, he seems to be kind of calm. We love some character development. And he's actually standing up to her, even though he already knows that she is not only a demon, but an extremely powerful one. Why do you think Zenitsu was able to pull this off in this moment?
I think we've talked about this a little bit before, right? Like, Zenitsu being the character whose motivation doesn't stem from like their own work, right? But it stems from the desires of others. So I think that's part of it. But also, right, I think he's pulling a little bit of a Death Note here, in the like L and Light dynamic of like, they both know who each other are. They haven't fully like given the context to the rest of the people in the room, but they are pushing each other in those ways where they're like, hey, like, I know who you are. And Zenitsu is doing it right back. It's like, hey, I know you are not human, but you can't blow your cover right now either. So like, I'm going to push you as far as I can, because that's bullshit that you're literally ripping this kid's ear off.
100%. I think that Zenitsu, we've seen that he's like a little bit girl crazy before.
A little.
He's trying to be faithful, but it's hard, right? There's so many cute girls in the world. So, that aside, these are obviously like slightly younger women that are in the room, but I think tied closely to his kind of like lovesick energy is a certain sense of chivalry as well. And so he does not, as a young man, want to see the young ladies get abused. And so he'll stand up, I think, to anybody that is causing them pain in that way, because it's just how he was raised and it's what he knows as well. It's just part of his personality. So in addition to realizing that it's a demon, he's not going to let himself not look cool in front of the ladies. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to know, like, there's obviously that big age gap between Zenitsu and these girls that he's helping at this moment. So I think there is that side to him where maybe if they're young enough, he obviously can control himself, but he still wants to be protective over them because he's honestly just a good guy. So it was definitely an interesting side to him that I saw in this scene for sure. He was unable to stand up to her for long, though, unfortunately. She kind of flings him across the room, knocking him out. We also see her switch her attitude as like the house chaperone begs her to forgive the situation. She switches on a dime to apologize, does that like sweet smile. But as she's walking away, we hear her thoughts about Zenitsu being no civilian. So she's able to kind of tell that obviously, first of all, it's a boy, not a girl. Second of all, not a civilian, definitely Demon Slayer. We then get a chilling scene where she kind of giddily declares that she will be happy to kill all the Demon Slayer members who come her way. As I said in the introduction today, this episode is very eerie and seems to be setting up for quite the battle with what seems to be this demon as the main enemy. How do you think of this? How do you think this is being set up? Like, is this going to be really, really hard? Is this going to be maybe easier than we think? I'm feeling it's going to be pretty hard.
This one is definitely going to be pretty hard. It's definitely eerie. We've already had the context set up to show like how old this demon is, and to be able to survive for so long, we know the amount of humans that they probably have had to consume to continue to remain viable, but also like this level of strong for so many years, it's a lot. And she set up house in a really smart way compared, I think, to a lot of the male demons that we've seen so far. They've kind of been somewhere remote, whereas like this one's kind of hidden in plain sight. And it's like the perfect setup for lecherous people to go missing that nobody would miss. It's not super suspicious, able to go kind of mostly undetected for possibly 300 years. Mm-hmm. This definitely could be our main enemy. She's smart, she's strong, she's old, and she has a lot of practice.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is giving us a little bit of context, and I think we're starting to build, because I mean, even this in itself is somewhat of a battle, I would consider it maybe more of a skirmish, if you will. But right, Zenitsu, I was kind of proud of him. I will have to shout this moment out, because he looked this Oiren right in the eyes and said, please take your hands off of her. And I mean, he stood his ground firm. Now, for what I think that kind of means for Zenitsu, I definitely think that he's going to maybe have a 1v1. I think he's going to want to get some retribution at some point, right? So I think that kind of being set up right now is for like a battle between them later. But really, this battle, I think, is going to be a lot more difficult than they think, because we're already seeing some different elements, right, than what we've seen from other demons. Other demons, their blood arts have been a little bit more localized, if you will, right? Like with Kill Guy, drums, right? He was able to move the rooms within his own house. We had Rui, he was able to go ahead and, you know, use threads that were already pre-constructed. Now, with what we're seeing from this demon, we've seen belts in different locations being controlled from a localized point. So we really don't know the extent of what she's got going on with these belts, and we don't really know where we're headed with this. So very interesting things to be looking at here.
Yeah, it's definitely a different experience the way we're getting introduced to her, because she's just, it's not like, we went to a mission and we found the demon. Like, we're trying to figure out who the demon is because she's so good at hiding. This is a, you know, very new experience. So definitely setting us up for a wild time. Excuse me. We also see another flashback, but this one's from only 2 days ago. And it is the Kyogoku house headmistress, Omitsu, and she's confronting Warabahime. we get some lore here, saying that she's been around for quite some time, like we talked about, always taking on names that end with Hime. This poor woman took a knife to a demon fight. I mean, oops. She doesn't make it long. We do get the big reveal. We've been wondering, like, is this an upper moon? Is this a 12 Kizuki? And it is upper six. While this is lower than Akaza, this is our only other experience with an upper rank before. Are our favorite little munchkins ready for that?
Yeah, it's hard to tell, right? Because Rengoku versus Akaza was a pretty narrow fight margin, right? Like, yes, Rengoku didn't make it through that fight. However, Akaza almost didn't make it either. So at this point, right, they've gone through a training arc and they've seen what they've seen. And they've also kind of gotten some more battle experience with Mugen Train. I think maybe it's a little bit over their heads. You know, they do have a Hashira with them, right? They have Tengen, who's hopefully going to be able to show them a move or two. But the thing here is that they are facing something that's pretty tough. And if it's anything close to what Akaza did, it's going to be a time.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to have to agree with Ryan here. It's going to be a rough fight. Akaza obviously is extraordinarily strong, but upper six is nothing to scoff at. And she's clearly extraordinarily smart. Like I just touched on in my last answer, hidden in plain sight. Whereas, like, even though Akaza has a lot of brute strength, it's not being used in a similar way. You know, she has like very tactical abilities and thoughts clearly, and has been able to go for so long. That being said, in theory, they have Tengen's assistance here. So, like, I think that the question may end up being, like, can Tengen lead our boys through this successfully? Mm-hmm. And will his fighting style measure up to what we saw Rengoku be able to do on his own? Is he able to incorporate the boys, or is he going to take over? I don't know. We're going to find out.
I mean, we are stronger now, too. 4 months have gone by since the Mugen Train. So, you know, they got a lot of training done, and they're definitely leveling up, but the demons are also leveling up. So it's kind of like, oh, we think we're going to be better. And then, oh, we're getting a more powerful demon to fight. So should be interesting for sure. Moving on, though, Omitsu is no longer with us. Our upper rank demon made quick work of that as well. We then move forward to her finding Muzan waiting for her inside the house. I thought this was actually quite interesting because she was carrying herself so strongly and she was like very scary and confident. But the moment she saw Muzan, instant change. She's like scared, submissive, anxious. She's got her nose on the ground. Muzan said he was proud of her and told her to keep going, but the shift in her character was very extreme. We have talked previously about the control Muzan has over the demons and how it differs from, you know, how like the Hashira and the Slayers will respect Ubiyashiki. We now continue to see it, even with the upper ranks. We kind of got a view of that with Akaza, and now we're seeing it with Daki, as he says during this monologue. What does this continue to say about his power and control?
it just continues to build upon the knowledge, I think, that we've already had, and it shows how widespread this phenomenon is. It's like there is no defying what is essentially the god of the demons. Regardless of how strong they are, he is infinitely stronger. They have like come from him, and they are nothing without him, and a vengeful god. Very, very frightening. So not necessarily a surprise, but it just goes to show that this fight is going to be a struggle. And I think it lends again to this idea that, like, as hard as all of the upper moons will be, Muzan is still leagues above everything that we've seen so far, just with a look.
Yeah, I think with this one, you know, I think it builds context on both ends, right? Like, we hear Muzan state that she's taken out 7 Hashira. So at that point, you're like, oh shit, right? And if, you know, there's someone above that, right? We don't know how many people Akaza's taken down, like as our highest point of reference, but knowing that she's taken down 7 Hashira, that's pretty scary to think. So with that in mind, right, you definitely think about, you know, what 1 Hashira in 3, and I think Mizunoe or Kinoe, I don't know. I don't remember the rank. Don't quote me on it. Talk to me about it later. But nonetheless, right, you see this power dynamic and again, this contrast and setting up the rest of like kind of the stages in end phase, because, you know, obviously, right, we've talked about this before. Eventually, the final battle will be against Muzan. Like, that's the entire goal of this story. So thinking about how far we are in that journey to get to that final battle, we're pretty far away from it. We still got 5 more in the way of the final one. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's wild. It's just, it's really setting us up for just how powerful he is. We've seen it multiple times now, and just, she has been so confident and just scary. And all of a sudden she's like a scared little girl, like just because he's there. He's not even doing anything. He's just like, hi, Doki. Ah, like, what? It's so scary. It's like, we have to fight this. What? How are we going to do that? Finally, this episode actually had that post-credit scene, which I almost didn't watch the first time because anime will get you sometimes with that. Zenitsu has woken up to the young girls kind of helping him out, thanking him for standing up for them. What we think is kind of the sweet little closing scene turns very quickly, however, when we see Daki's belts flash by in what seems like an abduction of Zenitsu. So things are picking up pretty quickly here, aren't they? How do we think we're getting out of this one alive?
I mean, I definitely questioned if everyone was making it out alive. You know, at this point, right, they were like, ha, here's a nice character you'll like. Ha, he's dead. And so, you know.
Rude.
I mean, pretty much, though. It ain't my fault. Make Aniplex sad about it. But the thing here is that, like, we definitely know that things are going to be turning up quickly. We've seen how this demon that we're working with here is able to very quickly make decisions and change her situation to be more favorable. So, you know, I questioned that a lot if we were making it out alive today.
Yeah. It's going to require a lot of coordinated teamwork, I think. And shifting of responsibility for taking the lead in this battle, because clearly, again, she's extraordinarily smart. She's extraordinarily strong. We've now seen Muzan reaffirm that in her too. This is like clearly a demon that, even though he is like harsh with all his demons, I would imagine he's relatively confident in especially his upper 6. This is going to be a difficult fight. It's going to be a battle of strength and wits. So, how are we getting out of this alive? Very carefully.
Yeah, I think what Mugen Train did to me was to not trust that anyone is safe. I also blame Attack on Titan as that as well. So at this point, I'm like, I'm not only trying to not get attached to the Hashira, I'm thinking of other things. Like, man, what if they just throw us a total gut punch and kill off one of the Komoboko squad. So that's like where my brain is at this point in the arc, is like, I can't get attached to anyone. Unfortunately, I already am though. So we'll see how that goes. Cool. Well, that was another great episode, and I really can't wait to dive into this arc more. It is time to transition into our favorite moments, unless either one of you have anything else to add before we do so. No? Cool. All right. So I'll go first with my favorite moment. We got a full episode of Inosuke without his boar mask. I will just say, I love that. I love whenever we get to see him without his boar mask. He has such a sweet face. But I especially love just like every moment with Inosuke in this episode, especially the moment where he's being that little detective and he's like trying to think things through and then declares that it's not his style. I think you can really start to see just the influence that Tanjiro and Zenitsu have had over him, because he wouldn't have even remotely had a moment like that, like in season one. Never would his brain be like, I need to think about this first. And of course he was like halfway through like, ah, I'm not like this, which is very like him as well. And I just like to see like that little development in him and see him using his brain instead of his muscles for once. I love him so much.
In this house, we love Inosuke.
Absolutely.
Silly boy. My favorite moment, I think, was actually our poor, small little character, Omitsu, having the reflection and talking about like what I think she said her grandmother had told her about, with like, oh, there were all these different Oirens and their names all, you know, ended like this, and they were all kind of twisted. And so her putting two and two together and almost realizing this like ghost story, kind of this like demon story, I thought that that was really cool. It was really chilling, and that's a context that we haven't really seen a demon in before, so I really liked that. I thought it was cool.
I think for me, favorite moment here is going to be from Zenitsu. I mean, are we surprised? No. But two of them here. First off, when he, I thought it was a really cool animation moment that they gave him when he heard the little girl cry out and it was the thunder in his ear. Also, don't know if you noticed, but when he was walking and they were showing his ears, you could see how flexed his ear muscles were. And I think that was a really cool animation design, because I think it was him trying his best to use his hearing senses at like his most discreet capacity to try and find that demon. So I thought that was a really cool touch, because, you know, being able to hear a bunch of stuff and multiple conversations, they kind of show it like with people talking about just random stuff in between, like what he's looking for. And I kind of relate to that as well. Like if there's a room full of conversations, I'm hearing all eight and like following them. So kind of vibes there. Finally, him just looking Doki dead on and being like, take your hands off of her. I was so proud of him, because he was like, no sleepy boy for him. He looked at her dead in the eye and said it. And I mean, nonetheless, a very pretty woman too. So that was a big step for him.
It gave me chills. Like I said earlier, like we're really getting some development out of him and seeing other sides to him, which is really, really awesome. We love Zenitsu in this house too. We love all of our squad. All right. Well, that's it for today, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, Hashira Half Hour. If you shoot us a DM or leave a comment on a post, you might see that answered in a future episode. And don't forget to spread the word with all of your anime and Demon Slayer loving friends. We thank you again. And as always, umai.
Umai.
Umai.